If you ask me, nothing stinks more than when your husband Dutch ovens you with a big, ripe, juicy one and then holds your head down under the covers. Except maybe body odor. That's why I'm excited to tell you about Lumi Whole Body Deodorant. Lumi delivers outrageous 72-hour odor control everywhere, from your pits to your feet, and yes, even those private parts. As a special offer, new customers get 15% off all Lumi products with our exclusive code and link. Use code BUNNY, B-U-N-N-I-E, at LumiDeodorant.com. That's LumiDeodorant.com. You guys know I absolutely love Lumi. I rock it everywhere I go. I work long hours, so if I'm doing like a podcast run or if I'm out at one of my husband's shows or just overall anxiety ridden and I'm sweating, Lumi has saved me so many times, especially a toasted coconut. I feel like it masks my odor a little bit more, and especially that right armpit that always smells like beef stroganoff. If you know, you know. Once again, as a special offer for listeners, new customers get 15% off all Lumi products with our exclusive code. And if you combine the 15% off with the already discounted starter pack, that equals over 40% off their starter pack. Use code BUNNY, B-U-N-N-I-E, for 15% off your first purchase at LumiDeodorant.com. That's code BUNNY, B-U-N-N-I-E, at LumiDeodorant.com.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Is this thing on?
All right, gentlemen, coming to main stage next, this is Bunny. Get up there. She's got a tornado of titties coming your way. Get those dollar bills ready. She's got an ass that shakes like Michael J. Fox. So get up there and throw them dollars.
Dude, that is fucking iconic. What's up, you sexy motherfuckers? Today, I have somebody that I have been looking forward to meeting. Not only me looking forward to meeting, but my husband was more excited about this guest than I was. Ophelia, a.k.a. Mama Tot, is in the house, baby. How are you?
That is me. I'm perfect. I'm so excited to be here.
Dude.
Like, I didn't realize how much Tennessee, this area, is just like Mobile, Alabama.
Oh, yeah. We're like sisters.
Yeah. There's no difference other than the downtown area being just more lively than it is in Mobile.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, everybody acts the same, looks the same.
Aww.
Like,
so it feels like home.
Yeah, it. Oh. You know what Nashville reminds me of?
What?
A southern version of L.A.
Absolutely.
Like a southern version of
L.A. Yes, and we're getting the traffic here, too.
Yeah.
It's fucking bullshit, let me tell you.
It gives me anxiety. I had anxiety getting here.
Speaking of anxiety, how was it checking into the Airbnb yesterday?
It was a little difficult. You know, everything is so technical and computerized and I'm not too savvy with that. I mean, yeah. I can barely work a laptop.
I don't like it.
But it was different.
Give me a key and a hole.
That's all I need.
Really?
Okay?
Like, literally.
That's what my husband says. Okay?
Yeah, that's what he said.
It was a little stressful for that, but it was beautiful.
Oh, good.
It's beautiful.
Good. Yeah, we were laughing before the camera started rolling because the Airbnb host, I was like, so is there a parking pass? And he sent me like fucking three paragraphs. And I'm just like, bro, I can't handle this shit. Airbnb aside, we got Mama Tot in Nashville. So did you go out last night in Nashville?
You know I did, honey.
Did you get recognized?
Yes. Every time I went to the restroom, I was in there for 20 minutes hugging people.
Yeah.
Okay, and taking pictures. One of them, there was a bathroom attendant in there, and we had a whole therapy session.
Oh, shit.
She just, in tears. And I ended up, like, tipping her $30 because... It was beautiful. But aww. Everywhere I went, honey, there was somebody somewhere. I mean, I had no idea that it was this many people that knew me right. in this area. Like, I just think people in Mobile know me or something. I don't know.
That's why I think you're so much like my husband, because my husband will go places and he always has people breaking down, crying to him, telling them his stories and how his music has touched them. And
like, because he's amazing.
But so are you. And that's what I'm trying to say, is you guys both have that same where you're just like oblivious to how mm-hmm. much you touch people's souls,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, I don't think about it.
I
think
do.
That I'm talking to my besties every day right. on those videos. But I'm going to go out tonight and take some extra tissues, because it was...
Just pull them out.
I was a hot mess yesterday. Honey, we was drinking at 11 a.m. Oh. at the pool, okay? We came back, got a shower, and then went back out again, and we bar hopped, which that was fun.
Yeah.
Okay. My bestie Rissa, she is just a ham. She's hilarious.
A sweetie pie.
She
seems very protective over you.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
But her and Gibson are like buddy. They're mm-hmm. besties. But we had a great time, so we're gonna go out again tonight and then head on home.
Well, I'm so fucking stoked to hear your story. I just let's start from the beginning, because I know that you have a story. With your mom and stuff like that, if I'm correct. But mm-hmm. So where were you born?
Mobile.
Oh, so you're just yes. a lifer. Just
never left.
Oh, well, I never love that. Leave. Sorry, my nose is running.
It's home. It's yeah. you know, I don't have much family there, but you know, I've established family with, you know, my husband's side of the family.
Oh, and, I love that.
Then my kids sides of their family. But yeah, I was born there. I'm 40. I'll mm-hmm. be 41 in September.
You're beautiful. I'm 42. Thank We're just
you.
Crushing it. I feel like women that are 40 and above are crushing it right now. Like,
you
we're
know,
in our prime.
You know what's funny? If you look at photos from like the 70s or 80s mm-hmm. and see people in their 40s, they look like they were 60.
Right.
But you see people today mm-hmm. in their 40s, and you can't even guess their
no.
age.
No.
That is wild to me.
Yeah, you don't look like you're going to be like you're 40 to me at all.
I hope not. You know, speaking of my mother was a beautiful woman. Mm-hmm. I will say that till the day I die. Mm-hmm. And she really did have some pretty daughters. I will say Aww. That.
So you have sisters
mm-hmm.
and brothers.
So this is how it goes. Because okay. I don't know if I've ever explained it in detail.
I've searched
like this.
Right. I've searched for like answers and I couldn't find it. So I was really curious yes. as to that story.
Well, I'm the baby. Okay. So many, many moons ago, my mother got married. Now, I'm not too sure how old. I would think probably in her early 20s.
They got married young back then.
They did. Yeah. They did. She got married, and she had three children mm. with that marriage. And I love him. That's my sibling's dad. We call him Papa.
Aww.
After some time, they divorced. And then, you know, years later, she meets my dad, and then I was the only one they had together.
Mm.
On my dad's side, he gets married to this lady when he's 21. They have a daughter. They get divorced. He marries this other lady. They mm-hmm. have a son. They get divorced. And then he marries my mom.
Sounds like my
So
dad.
I have two siblings that are my half-siblings from my dad. And I have three siblings that are my half-siblings from my mama.
Wow.
But between my mom and dad, I was the only one they had together.
Right. Same with me.
Yeah. So it went like that. So my mom and dad were married until he passed away. And
Aww.
Tell you the truth, if I think about it now, if he wouldn't have passed away, they probably would still be married, because he just loved the hell out of her crazy ass.
Aww.
He was the only one that could really rein her in, if I can say it like that.
Right.
He knew how to work her. He knew what not to do to set her off. He just knew the tricks of the trade mm. when it come to her. So,
did your mom suffer from mental illness?
Oh,
it
yes.
sounds like she might have been
oh,
bipolar,
yes.
possibly.
She was bipolar. Mm. I think she was diagnosed.
Mm.
I want to say maybe mid-30s, early 40s. Mm. It was around the time where I was about 8 or 9 years old, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the conversations about that, like just in the house. Mm-hmm. She never came out and told me that. I just remembered hearing it. And then as I got older, I remember seeing certain medication on the table and, you know, seeing what it was for and stuff. So she never came out and said anything, but I just remembered it.
It's got to be tough as a child to try to figure out, you know, put the pieces together of why is mom acting like this?
You know, it's wild because when I was in elementary school, you know, first grade, kindergarten, second grade, to me, I'm thinking that's how every mama was. Mm. It's not, you know, I'm not realizing that mine was quite different.
Right.
Until I started to get a little older. Fourth grade, fifth grade, I would stay at other people's homes, you know, slumber parties,
right,
birthday parties, and I'd start seeing all these other mamas that would just be so nice and sweet. And, you know, there was a little girl named Jessica that moved in the neighborhood. I met her on the bus, and we became instant friends. And her mama's name was Miss Carmen. Oh, she was so pretty. Oh. She was just a blonde bombshell back then. I would start going over Jessica's house, and her mom, just the nicest thing. Do y'all want some lunch? Here, sit down. You know, it was just heavenly, heavenly. So it wasn't until I was about in the fourth or fifth grade I started to realize that I have someone different in my home. This isn't normal, you know. There were just...
Was she physically abusive?
Oh, yes.
When did this start? When did the...
As little as I can remember. You know, I tried to think about this the other day when somebody else asked me that question. And I can remember things back from kindergarten.
Right.
And so I remember at least I had to be 5, 6 years old when the physical abuse started. God. Now, she wouldn't do this in front of my daddy at all. And there was one situation, I think I was maybe about 9 or 10. I hadn't hit middle school. Middle school in Mobile's like starting at sixth grade.
Right.
So I was still in elementary school. I don't remember what it was for, which was probably nothing. But she beat me so bad with a belt. Aww. And you know, if that's happening, you're gonna start, you know, holding your bottom, trying to... Well, as I did that, there were webs just up my arm, just it completely up my forearm. She'd sent me to my room after that. Well, I'd went to sleep. Of course, I cried myself to sleep. My daddy must have come in there at nighttime when he got off of work just to check on me. And my arm was laying like this, and I had on a short sleeve shirt, and he seen that. Mm. And I got woken up by him just verbally, because he would never be physical with anybody, just verbally and threatening my mother, like, don't you put your hands on that baby, just really, you know, doing what he could. You know,
so he was very protective over you.
He was my angel. He was my protector.
That's so.
So when he was around, because he owned a car dealership, so he was not at home Monday through Saturday. He was quite a workaholic. Cars was his life. So he'd be gone throughout the day, and she was a stay-at-home mom.
That was my next question.
So I would only really be alone with her unless it was after school or in the summertime.
Right.
So it was much different for me when he wasn't home. But the second he came home, she would be nice or try to be kind.
That's how my stepmother was. I grew up in a very abusive, with a very abusive childhood, a very abusive stepmother. And she would play me and my dad against each other. And
it's evil.
When you said that you would go over to other people's houses and see how nice that makes me just want to cry, because I remember that same feeling as a child. You're like, why can't my mom be like that?
Being able to recognize it.
You just want to be loved as a child. That's all kids want. They just want that love. So growing up with that in the house, did the abuse continue as you got older?
Oh, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
It didn't quit. It got worse.
Were you the only child she abused?
In the home. No.
She
did it to the other three. The thing is, and I feel it's okay. I can tell this story. I mean, I know it's not my personal story, but I know my big sis would be okay with
this.
Right.
And if not, we can always cut it out.
Those kids got the hell out of there. And they went to live with their dad in Florida. From they were little.
They had the option to leave.
They had the option, and my mama didn't fight for them. Their daddy came down there and got those kids, my siblings. And my mother never fought, never nothing. It was, okay. You know, that's why my siblings grew up in Florida.
Right.
And I grew up here. So I would see them from time to time. They would, you know, come for the summertime. It was just like as if she had custody of them and they would go to their dad's. It was just flipped.
Right.
You know, so they lived with him full time. And then they would see her just, you know, in the summertime and stuff like that.
Wow.
So I was the only one that was completely raised in that home with her because I didn't have an option to go nowhere. You know, they were married. You know, they weren't separated or divorced. They were in their marriage.
And they were both your parents.
And they were my parents. So, you know, and it's like my sister said, she said, thank goodness. You know, thank goodness because they've got a great daddy. You know, that's what we just love him to death. Yeah. I mean, I was just
Papa,
with him.
Right?
Oh, yes. Yes. We love my husband loves him too.
Yeah.
But he was wonderful. He's a great dad. Right. Always has been. And now he's an excellent grandfather. But so I didn't have that option.
Right.
Now there were a few times that one of my sisters, you know, came down during high school years to try to, you know, see how it would work living there.
Right.
They didn't even last a year. Wow. They didn't last a year. They got. I even resented one of my sisters when she left.
Because you felt like she abandoned you.
She abandoned, yes. Mm-hmm. And I come home from school and all of her things was gone because she protected me too. Because she was a teenager. You know, she would fight back against our mother for, you know, how I was being treated.
Right. Would she ever tell your dad, like, hey, this is going on?
Oh, yeah.
And he would just yell at her and, like, you know, he threatened didn't really
divorce.
Didn't really have a choice.
You know, I'll take you to court and I'll take, you know, because in his mind, for whatever reason, he thought that was gonna work. But it didn't work because you're not dealing with a normal person.
Right.
You're not dealing with someone in a rational way. And it's so hard to explain that to people because everybody was like, why did he stay? Well,
was she abusive to him too?
No. So she never laid a hand on him. He never laid a hand on her. The only thing I ever seen between my mom and dad was just arguing. Mm. And
so she was just like a completely different human with him.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I can tell you that even me being a little girl, I would recognize that the arguments would be started by her. That's so wild. As a little girl, being in the back seat of the car thinking, well, you shouldn't have said that because now he's going to be upset. You know, I was old enough to recognize it.
Mm-hmm. What happens whenever you're a child that grows up in abuse is you become hyper aware of your surroundings and you're in constant fight or flight. So you're zeroed in on everything. Like literally you're on a battlefield waiting for to step on the next bomb. You know, is what's happening. And
that's how it feels.
Yeah, no, 100%. I grew up like that too. And that's why you were so zeroed in and you could read your mom so well because you were waiting to see when her next mood swing was coming or, you know, what was happening. And that's just a lot of pressure to put on a child.
I have terrible, terrible anxiety.
Me too.
Of the fear of the unknown. Mm-hmm. I've terrible claustrophobia, you know, and elevators and things like that. That stems from she made me sit in the bathroom for 6 hours one day as a punishment with the lights. It was so
with
those
the
things
lights off?
With the lights off. I was scared of the dark. I was only 8 years old.
Oh
and,
my gosh!
But what I'm trying to say is, every day when I would get on the bus to go home from school, I would be okay. You know, riding the bus in the neighborhood. But the closer it got to my home, my heart would start racing. I would start shaking because I didn't know what kind of mama I was going to get when I walked through that door. Because it would change at any moment.
Was she ever nice to you at any time in your
life? Sure, there were times, you know.
But was it real, or was it just because she needed something or wanted something?
You know, I can recognize her, the fakeness, because that was always done in front of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people at the church,
mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
At a baby shower.
That's how my stepmom was.
Something like that.
She would beat your ass in the car and then go praise God, you know.
That's precisely how it was,
mm-hmm.
You know. And just, I was sitting in the pew one time. The night before, she had hit me so hard in my mouth that it had cut the inside of my lip because of my tooth.
Mm.
You know, it had hit that bottom tooth. And I was sitting in the pew, and she was just standing up praising Jesus. And I remember just looking behind her thinking,
so much anger.
Do you even know what you did to me last night?
Yeah,
you know?
That's a lot of emotions as a child to be going through.
Oh, it was horrible. So I did everything I could to kind of stay away from the home.
Right.
You know, when school was out, I'd throw my book bag on the couch, and I'd dart out the door.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I was in first grade, on the bus, I met my friend Sarah, my childhood friend Sarah. And we met that day, and we found out we lived 4 houses down from one another.
Aww.
And that was it. We've been friends almost 40 years later.
Aww.
But her mama, Miss Jenny, was everything to me.
Aww.
She did everything. She, you know, when I got my period for the first time, I went to her. You know, when I was 15 and was worried I was pregnant, I went to Miss Jenny.
Aww.
You know, she was the mama that I so very much wish I had when I went home every day.
God sent you an angel.
Oh, she was a complete substitute of a mother to me.
Yeah.
And my mother was getting the feeling of that, and she didn't like anybody to be better than her.
Mm.
She didn't like anybody to know what she did behind closed doors. She was always very afraid of what people were thinking of her, and always thought someone was talking bad about her.
Sounds like she has narcissism, too.
Oh, terribly.
Mm-hmm.
100%.
Yeah.
So then she would try to forbid me, you know,
from having
that friend down the road because
it brought you happiness.
Yeah.
She couldn't stand to see you happy.
She didn't like that. She didn't want me to tell people my stories when I was little. You know, why did I have this bruise on me? Why this? You know, she didn't want that. It's so wild how that really affected her, about how bad she didn't want people to think that she was a bad person, or I hate to use this word, you know, crazy.
Right.
That she would go out of her way to try to be a different person in front of them so that they couldn't find something bad to say.
Narcissists hate somebody else exposing them and painting a picture of who they really are, because they've built up so many personalities. They're like puppeteers, you know, so it's like behind the curtain. They don't want people to know what's going on behind the curtain. Mm-hmm. They want it to seem like they're just this perfect package.
That's
and they
right.
have all their shit together, when really they're just falling apart.
That is very, very true.
So I heard you mention that you thought that you were pregnant at 15. As you started getting older, did the abuse continue up into your teens?
Okay, so it did.
Wow.
It did. Now,
did you ever think to just fight back? Because I finally did.
Well, that's what I was getting at.
Yeah,
so sorry. My dad died when I was 13.
Oh, no.
And that entire year after he passed, I didn't really see my mama.
Oh.
My heart goes out to her because, and I'm getting emotional even thinking about this, because God forbid something happened to my husband today,
I wouldn't know what to do either.
I would probably do the same thing. Mm-hmm. So she just kind of disappeared to her room, you know, didn't wake me up for school, didn't cook, she didn't do anything.
Wow.
So I didn't see her for weeks and sometimes months at a time. Now, of course, I don't know if she'd come out of that room while I was at school, you know, but when I came home, if I tried to open that bedroom door, I got hollered at, you know.
Wow.
And she has suffered from depression her entire life. Again, I feel for her with that.
Yeah.
But I cannot imagine what she went through getting that phone call saying, your husband just had a heart attack.
Mm.
If I ever get something like that, I would be in the same boat.
I couldn't imagine.
So I will never, ever hold this area against her because of that.
That speaks volumes of you, Ophelia.
I empathize with that.
I'm like trying so hard not to cry over here. That speaks volumes of the human that you are, that this woman has put you through so much pain and so much hurt, and you just still have so much love and compassion. Like,
well, I have to, you know, it, you know, I don't have time to be angry and bitter and frustrated just because I got dealt a couple of shitty hands in my life.
I love that outlook.
It takes so much more energy to just be that way when you can just, you know, continue being a blessing in somebody else's life.
Yep.
You know,
Sorry, I'm over here fighting tears so bad because this really like touches home. Like I've can really relate to your story.
Yeah, it's your life.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So I didn't see her for, I would say about a year.
How did your dad passing away affect you?
Sure. Okay, so like I mentioned earlier, he owned a car dealership, mm-hmm. and it was used cars, and he had just an amazing reputation in Mobile for being, you know, a used car lot. He would go out of his way for families. Mm-hmm. There was this family that showed up one time. They had just enough money for the car, and my dad knocked the price down, then drove the car to the gas station next door, filled it up for him. Like, my daddy was best man on the planet. So he had a wonderful business. But he refused to buy local. He did not trust the vehicles. And that's probably why he has such a good reputation, you know. So every Monday he'd fly out of Pensacola, mm-hmm. and fly to St. Petersburg, mm-hmm. in Florida.
Yep.
And he purchased from those big auctions down there in Florida. And then he would have the vehicles transported on one of those transport trucks. Well, he was a smoker, menthol, mm-hmm. Salem Light 100s. He'd been coughing for about 3 weeks. A cough just wouldn't go away. He goes to the doctor, and he's told that he's got congestive heart failure.
Mm.
Now, from what we understand, that doctor told him, you've got to take some time off of work.
Yeah.
You've got to relax. You're a workaholic. Your heart is not doing good. Let's take some time off.
Treat your body good.
He took about 2 weeks off. And said, yeah, I need to go back out there and get some cars. Well, my mama asked him to take my brother with him, you know, my dad's son from a previous marriage, my brother Brad. And my daddy said, no, I'll go. I'll be fine. Don't worry about it. That was Monday. We get a call Thursday, and this is about 2 hours past the time he's supposed to be home. And, of course, my mama just thought he was just running late. And we get a phone call, and I answer it, and it's my grandfather, which is my father's dad. And he said, Opie, I need to talk to your mama. And I said, okay, well, she's in her room. And he said, I love you. I said, well, I love you. My grandpa was great. I said, I love you too, Grandpa. And he said, let me talk to your mama. It's serious. And I'm thinking, serious? Okay. You know, I was 13. Mm. That is not what's going to cross my mind. I go in there and I open the door and I said, Mama, my grandpa's on the phone. And I just kind of left the door cracked because I was going to listen to the phone conversation.
Yeah. We all did that as kids.
And Mama sat up on the edge of the bed and I could see her back on the phone at the nightstand. And all of a sudden, with about 10 seconds, she starts screaming, saying, no. Then I opened the door again and I said, Mama, what is it? And I don't hold no grudge against this. I'm really putting myself in her shoes. She just turned around and screamed, your daddy is dead.
Mm.
And just starts crying and screaming. I'm just really on the phone, you know, with my grandpa. And I thought, did I really just hear that? Mm. So I stood there just in shock and waited till she got off the phone. And I really don't remember what happened after that.
Yeah, you disassociated.
Other than I do know that I was the one that chose to call my sister, my dad's first child. My mother hated her for all the wrong reasons.
Mm.
You know, she ain't never did anything to her, just didn't like her.
Right.
I was the one that did call my sister and have to tell her.
It got how and you were 13?
13. He died December 15th, 1994. Mm. So right before Christmas.
Oh.
So I don't only remember pieces of the funeral. I remember my dress being too tight because I had outgrown it. You know, I remember just these tiny little unimportant things about.
You disassociated because you were under so much trauma that your brain just couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
You pretty much, like, your brain just fragmented to cope and to be able to get through life in that moment.
And I still do that today. There are so many things that I have forgotten about that I'd even went through until I'm just driving down the road and all of a sudden a memory just pops in my mind, you know? I remember there was a lot of people at that funeral because he was so well-loved in our community. He just kind of bent over backwards for just everybody. You know, he always
sounds
said,
like an amazing man.
He was perfect.
Yeah.
He said that's how he was so blessed because he enjoyed blessing other people.
Mm.
You know, he did the same thing for Miss Jenny, you know, gave her a car for almost nothing. You know, he just would do anything for anybody. But I didn't see her for about a year. I just continued getting up, going to school. Every morning, you know, I'd set my alarm clock and got up. I rode the bus and then I get into middle school.
That's a lot. You've had to deal with so much in such a short time of your life. You know, I just can't imagine just all that weight on your shoulders as a child, just knowing that you have to get up and be responsible for yourself, that you have to be
the
adult.
But when you're doing it, Bunny, you don't even think about it.
I know.
You just do it.
Oh,
you literally just do it because that's your life.
Yeah.
And you don't think, oh, this is going to be hard or, oh, I shouldn't be doing it. You just survive.
Survive, yep. Yep. Survive
and sometimes just exist.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so I'm turning 14
mm-hmm.
and I'm getting the feel of middle school now and boys and attention and, you know, what it looks like to go to a party and all that. And then I just, things changed.
Uh-oh.
Things changed. I started smoking marijuana, weed, the devil's grass. just stupid stuff.
Yeah.
Stupid stuff.
I mean, but that's normal. That's what all teenagers go through.
Oh, of course.
You know, I started doing that stuff at that age. I left home at 14 and never went back. So, you know, I imagine what I did on the streets of Vegas.
Yeah.
We were doing snorting glass and, I mean, doing crazy shit. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, no, I totally get it. But that's as a teenager, especially after all the trauma you've been through, you were just looking for an outlet.
That is all you're doing. You are looking for any way you can to relieve whatever it is you're dealing with.
Absolutely.
So because I wasn't getting the nurturing and the love and the attention from nobody else.
Yeah.
You know, it was just me and her in that home. That's it. That's just me and her. And I couldn't talk to her. I couldn't do anything with her. She gets physical with me when I'm about 14 and a half. I don't remember what it was, but that was the first time that I had fought back. I pushed her over the coffee table.
Good for you.
But I wouldn't mean it to.
But still, it was just...
I wanted her away from me.
Right. You just had enough.
Get off of me.
Yes.
Is where that come from.
Yes.
And when I did that, I don't think she messed with me physical. Again, really, I don't.
It's like a bully.
I don't think she ever did. I think it was, oh, okay, she's my size now.
Mm-hmm.
I can't control her now physically.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I think it probably resonated with her, like, oh, okay, I may not need to do that now. So I did, and she got up and she walked off, and I walked out the house. And you know, back then there wasn't cell phones or social media. We all had them pagers, honey.
Y'all
had
them pagers. The codes.
With the codes. Yep. And I walked to the neighbor's house and called somebody to come get me. And I don't even think I come home for like 1 or 2 weeks. And I still went to school.
Aww.
I stayed at my friend's house. School was very, very important to me.
To you.
Very important to me. And then I turned 15. you know, this is, you know, cutting everything a little bit shorter. You know, we don't have all the time in the world here.
I mean, I'm loving your story, so you take your time.
So I'm 15 now, and I meet this boy. Lord have mercy, did I fall in love with him.
Aww.
He was just, Lord, I fell in love. Mm. And this was so not puppy love. He was something else. And I'd have sex. Mm. Not thinking, not knowing anything. This could be life-changing. Mm. You know, you're not thinking that at the moment. It's the attention that you're getting.
It's the love.
That you need, that you affection. Need love. It's all of that that you're missing. You're just getting
that doesn't make you, but you're not a bad person. You literally have been through a lot of shit. You're a kid that's experimenting. What you're doing is normal for, you know, a child that's been through all the shit you've been through.
That's precisely what the hell was happening.
Yeah.
So what's crazy is that I didn't know anything about the symptoms. I didn't know what
did you get
look
pregnant
for.
The first time you had sex? Mm-hmm. Oh, mm-hmm. I have a similar story too. I ended up having to get an abortion because I was living on the streets, but
sure.
Yeah. That's crazy that the same exact thing almost happened to me. Our stories are so eerily similar. It's crazy.
You know, when my daughter was 16, 17, you know, we had already had a million daggum talks.
Right.
You know?
Oh, that's how I am with Bailey. With Bailey, it's like I try to keep the lines. I try to do everything that my stepmom did not do with me, you know, and break every emotional trauma that I ever went through and every generational curse, you know. And with Bailey, I try to tell her everything. You know, like if anything happens, she comes and sits down and talks to me. Mm-hmm. And just like you, I couldn't go and talk to my stepmom like that because I never knew what kind of mood she would be in or, you know, she was never diagnosed, but she was
trust her
at all. And if you did anything wrong, the whole family knew about it. Like it was just one of those things, mm-hmm. you know? So you have sex for the first time,
mm-hmm.
you get pregnant,
Had no idea. What happened and what made me, okay, wait a minute here. What's happening to my body?
Mm.
I got my period, I think, when I was like 12 and a half. That was the first time I got my period.
Yeah.
And that's a whole nother story.
Yeah. Oh, no. Because
it's hilarious. But I woke up that morning. I think it was on a Saturday, something like that. And my boobs were so sore.
Mm.
Now, from the time I first got my cycle, I had never had that symptom. Now I'm 40 and 2 days before I start my period, these things are engorged, you know?
But I have a little app that tracks everything in my life.
I never had that symptom.
Oh,
so
wow.
I'm thinking, what's going on here?
Mm.
Didn't think anything about it. At the time, my friend Sarah, Miss Jenny's daughter, was pregnant.
Uh-huh.
She's probably about 6 months, I think, six months along. And I ended up calling her. I said, why are my boobs hurting? What did I, like pull a muscle? And she said, oh, Opie, you know, have you and Garrett, have y'all been having sex or doing? And I was like, no. And I said, no. She said, are you sure? And I said, no. I just did it like that.
Yeah.
She said, okay, I'm coming to get you. The thing is, Miss Jenny worked at a clinic, a pregnancy test clinic.
Wow.
Now, it was Christian-based.
Mm-hmm.
So there were a lot of things in there, a lot of anti-abortion and all of that stuff, and but because she worked there, you know, she can bring tests home or I could come there.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up going to Miss Jenny, and Miss Jenny gives me a test, and as I'm waiting on it, she comes back in there. She says, you know, what would you do, you know, if you're not pregnant? This has to be a scare tactic.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to do things a little differently with your life now, don't you think? You know, was not scolding me,
right, just
but helping
loving.
Me understand, hey, I might, if this is a negative, this is a good thing, and I need to take care of myself.
She was being a mom.
She was being a mama. So we had a little conversation, you know, 10, 15 minutes, and she said, okay, well, I'll be back. And she comes back in there and she says, you're pregnant.
Mm.
And I wasn't scared. It wasn't registering how serious this situation was for a 15-year-old.
Right.
Because it is.
Oh, no.
It is.
Huge.
So I said, okay. And I said it just like that. Okay. And she said, but now we've got to go tell your mama because, you know, you need to go to the doctor. You need to, you know, make arrangements for things. And my mother is extremely religious. Mm. So, you know, I knew right off the bat abortion was not going to be something that my little self was going to do.
Right.
Now, I am a Christian, but I'm also pro-choice.
I would have never...
You have to be. I mean, I got a daughter running around on this world, and I want my damn daughter to have a freaking choice, okay? If
I could have gone back in time and not got the... What happened was I ended up getting the abortion. They didn't give me enough medication. I was awake the whole time, so I felt them ripping the baby from my body. And I was crying, telling them to stop, and they wouldn't stop. Well, the doctor ended up messing up something inside of me, and I had two ectopic pregnancies after that.
Really?
Yeah. So I paid for my choice as anything that I've ever done in my life that I've ever felt that I shouldn't do, and I still did it. I always, my karma always comes back around, and, you know, I always get taught my lesson. But I was a, you know, I was a baby. I didn't know what was happening, and I was pressured by the guy that I got pregnant by, and... You know, it was just, I was living on the streets. I was a runaway, you know, so it was like,
what the hell was I going to do?
You know, but I 100% respect your decision. I think what you did was amazing and brave to do at 15.
Even though, and I hate talking about politics, but this is important to me because I feel like I'm a good representation of what a real Christian looks like, you know? Is abortion for me? Probably not, just because I'm an old sappy woman and I'm in a different situation than someone who has to make a decision like that. Right. I've never been in something like that,
right.
You know? Mm-hmm. And truth be told, nobody likes abortion. Nobody. Mm-mm. But the people who have to go through that, I can't even imagine, you know?
Yeah.
But I think the government needs to stay out of people's business. I'm going to say that.
Yeah, this whole thing that's happening in Texas is... And Illinois, right? Is it just... Yeah, that's just...
It's crazy.
There's a lot of things I would love to speak about on that, too. I just don't understand it. And I think a woman's body is, you know, her body. And what if somebody gets raped or, incest?
That's what I'm talking about.
There's just so many...
It's too many scenarios.
It's not black and white. It's literally, there's so much gray area, and what they're doing, I think, is just not right.
It just wasn't in the cards for me personally.
Right. Yes. When you told your mom that you were pregnant, how did that go?
She threw a Bible at my stomach. She was standing, actually, I'd probably sitting just like this, and she was standing in front of me. Because I'd walked in the door. Now, Miss Jenny sat in that vehicle outside.
I'm so mad at your mom.
To make sure that I was going to be safe delivering this information.
Because she knew how your mom was.
Because Sarah was like, just wait till you start showing. And I said, no, I have to be honest. And I have to tell her right now. And I told her the same day. I wanted to do everything the right way as I felt should have been done.
Right.
You know. And I couldn't hold that from my mama, even though she wasn't a good one.
You have such an amazing moral compass.
I was still her child, and I would certainly be devastated if my daughter kept something like that from me.
Right.
So I wanted her to know that still as her daughter, I respected her, and I needed her to know is what I needed. And I said, well, I've got something to tell you. And she stands there and she says, what? You know, just an old attitude. And I said, I'm pregnant, just like that. She looks at me. And I don't know if you've ever seen one of these Bibles before. It's one of them big, thick Bibles. Mm-hmm. They're old, like from the 70s. Mm-hmm. And they usually sit on people's coffee tables at somebody's grandma's house.
Yeah, and they're heavy.
Yes. She picked up that Bible and threw it at my stomach as hard as she could. As hard as she could. And she said, you are on your own with that bastard child. And walked away. And I sat there a little bit in shock. Because I'm sitting here as a 15-year-old child. Because I was a child.
Trying to process.
Trying to figure out, is this a bad thing that just happened? Do I need to go tell Miss Jenny? Is the baby okay? Like, that's really what I'm thinking. Because, you know, you don't know this stuff. You see stuff on movies and, you know, pregnant women fall down and they lose the baby. Mm-hmm. I'm really not thinking of me.
Right.
I'm thinking of this very teeny, you know, probably 6-week little baby in the inside mm-hmm. of me. So she walked away and went back to the room. And I grabbed my things and I walked out the door and I knew Miss Jenny would still be sitting out there, and she was. And I got in the car, and she says, "Are we going home?" Mm-hmm. And I said, "Yes, ma'am, we're going to your home." And she didn't say anything in the vehicle. We just drove. It was me, Sarah, and Miss Jenny. Mm-hmm. I
that
sat in the back.
That makes me tear up, too, again.
looking out the window, just crying, mm-hmm. you know, because I didn't need anything from my mother at that moment mm-hmm. other than support. I, you know, no money, no nothing. I just needed her to say, "It's going to be okay."
Right.
I never got that, you know, ever. But I got it from Miss Jenny when I was getting out of the car when we got to her house. She gets out of the car and she walks over there and she says, "That's okay. I love you. Mm. And we're going to figure this thing out."
Praise
you know,
Jesus for Miss Jenny, right?
She was wonderful. Wonderful. You know, here she was, has her own daughter pregnant at 16. And then she's got little Ophelia, because that's what she always called me, pregnant at 15.
We're all in here crying. This is so...
I'm sorry,
I needed the emotional release.
Cry.
No, it's just...
It takes you back to those little girl moments, don't it?
Yeah.
That's what happens on my TikToks is people just, they feel in those moments mm-hmm. and it makes them think, that was me when I was 17, or that was me.
When you do EMDR, I always say it wrong. I don't know if it's EDMR or EMDR. I think it's EMDR therapy. I don't know if you've ever done that. They have you go back to the child and you and have these conversations with the child mm-hmm. Of yourself, mm-hmm. you know, and it's one of the most emotional things you'll ever do, but it was really freeing for
me
whenever I did it.
One of my other therapists that I've had told me about it, I don't know, maybe about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
But I said, no, I think that one would be a little bit too difficult for me.
We do it when you're ready, but I did about 2 sessions of it, and it was just such an emotional cleanse that I needed.
I was about to say, it's probably a release.
Yes. And so whenever you're ready, I would definitely look into that and, you know, take that time for you, because I feel like just from, you know, just the beginning of your conversation now, the little bit I know, you're such a you're a lot like me. It's like, it doesn't matter what we go through, we're always going to put other people's emotions before ours, because deep down inside we just don't want to hurt mm-hmm. you know. So as you know, I'm 42 and I didn't get depression until I was 40 years old because of all of the abuse and trauma mm-hmm. that I didn't deal with. Mm-hmm. So the past 2 years I've been on this spiritual journey of just trying to heal and just, you know, whatever tactics I can do as far as therapeutic and therapy mm-hmm. to help with that. So I just don't ever want it to hit you like a ton of bricks one day, like it did me, mm-hmm. you know. After you moved to Miss Jenny's, did you stay there the entire
pregnancy?
Well,
I didn't move there. I stayed there for a few weeks.
Okay, gotcha.
And then my mother called me mm-hmm. At Miss Jenny's house and said, I've made you a doctor's appointment, so I'm going to come get you because I need to take you to the doctor. Now, she was being like a normal mom at the moment, and I said, okay. And I was very grateful.
You just wanted her to love you.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, Lord, mm-hmm. yes. And she did. She came and got me from Miss Jenny's, and she took me to my first doctor's appointment, and I was like 6.5 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then we left there, and I went home and mm-hmm. tried to, you know, be normal. Now, this was in the summertime that I found out I was pregnant, if I'm not mistaken. But when school starts to happen, which I think is August or September, I go in there in the room. Now things are okay. They're okay for those few months.
Right.
Now she was still mean and hateful, but there was no abuse, physical right. abuse. There were verbal. Right. There would always be that. Mm. But it wasn't just so difficult that I needed to get out of there. It was tolerable. Right. You know?
It was like a walk in the park for you if you weren't getting hit right. finally for once.
Right, that's yeah. exactly right. But no, it was nothing physical during that time, which right. I was glad. But school was about to start. And that was the first year that Mobile County made it mandatory for kids to wear uniforms. Mm. You know, everybody was going to wear khaki pants, white shirt, or yeah. whatever school color you have. And the reason they did that, and they did this years ago, back in 1998 or 97, I think, was to cut the bullying down. You know, not yes. everybody's able to have nice clothes and, yeah. you know, clean clothes and, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So they felt like, okay, well, if all of y'all are wearing the same thing, you don't have anything to say now, do you? I liked the idea. I thought it was cool, but here's where my problem fell in. Mm-hmm. So I went in there, my mom's room, and I said, what am I going to do about uniforms? And she said, I'm not buying you uniforms. I said, well, that's, you know, we can't wear normal choice. Clothes no more. Yeah. She says, I'd be damned if I go anywhere to have to buy maternity uniforms. You are not going to that school and embarrassing this family. That's like just, you know, easily come out of her mouth. Just, it was nothing to her to say that. I'm sitting here thinking, I'll be 16 in like 2 weeks, you know, birthday's in September, I have to go to school, you know. It became a huge argument. Mm. I called my big sister, Laurie. That's me and Laurie's like this. And
shout
I said,
out, Laurie.
Can you please talk to her? Because if I don't have uniforms, I can't go to school. I got to go to school because, honey, I didn't care what I had to do. I was going to be a forensic anthropologist.
Yeah.
That was my goal. That's what I was going to do. Mm-hmm. I was going to University of Knoxville, Tennessee. Aww. That's where I was going to go. Yay. And I'm sitting here thinking, if I don't get to school, what in the world am I going to do? You know, So my sister gets involved. It becomes a huge conflict with my mother. It doesn't work. Wow. So I couldn't, I dropped out of school because she wouldn't go and sign me up. She wouldn't do anything. There was no other guardian that I had that was connected to my school records. I even called Miss Jenny and I said, can we lie? Can we say I live with something to get me? I did everything I could. And Miss Jenny said, you know, Ophelia, I love you, but I cannot get involved with something like that regarding, you know, your school stuff with your mom. Because my mama was terrible.
Right.
It was terrible. And I understood that. I would be putting Miss Jenny in harm's way. So I dealt with it.
Where was the father of the child during all this?
When I told him I was pregnant, we stayed together, and then when I was about 3 months, he broke up with me, just out of nowhere. He's a
douchebag,
a butthole.
Butthole.
And me and him we're just. I mean, we've been friends for 24 years.
Good.
He didn't know what the hell to do.
I mean, you guys were babies.
He didn't.
Yeah.
I have never hated him. Mm. I never asked for child support. I never did nothing.
Right.
I just brought this youngin' into this world, and that's it. Anytime he would call throughout the years to see Gibson, absolutely. Of course, you know, he will defend me for anybody. I love him. No. He just got scared. He didn't know what the hell to do. And yes, I figured it out, and he could have too, but he didn't. Right. And
men have it easy. Men can just walk away, and it's not a
problem. He was living it up. He was living it up. He was partying. You know, at this time, I think he had turned 18, so now he was the big shot, going in the clubs now.
Oh,
and,
gosh.
Oh, I was so angry at him.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
I hated him. The pregnancy was terrible.
Oh, no.
I developed preeclampsia at 32 weeks. Mm. I kept going into preterm labor.
What is preeclampsia for people at home who might not know what it is?
Well, there's preeclampsia and then there's toxemia. I've actually had both with my pregnancies. Preeclampsia is when the blood pressure of the mother is elevated so high where, if I'm saying this right, creatine spills over into the kidneys. Ugh. And they're able to see that through our urine when we pee in a cup. But the blood pressure skyrockets, and the only way to cure mama is to deliver this baby. So if mama gets preeclampsia when she's 28 weeks pregnant, that's bad. They're gonna have to induce you and take the, it's really, really bad.
Do you think it's because of all the stress that you were under?
I asked the doctor that, which I thought was a smart question, being so young, but I knew my daddy had high blood pressure. He says it could be. He said sometimes it just happens spur of the moment for mamas. He says sometimes it's hereditary. He said, with you, there's really just no telling. And I said, well, what about because I'm young? And he said, it has nothing to do with it. He said, your age during the pregnancy, any woman can get preeclampsia or toxemia. But that's it. The only way to save your life is to induce the labor and have a C-section, or if they feel you're okay to have a natural birth, they'll do that. I had went into preterm labor several times up until this point. I was constantly being taken to the ER. My mother constantly taking me to the ER, just dropping me off, getting them to check everything out, you know. And we were out yard selling one Saturday, and I didn't feel right. I looked in the mirror, in the, you know, the pull-down mirror in the car. My face was very puffy. I noticed my feet were swelling. I had read that book, What to Expect While You're Expecting. So I knew the feet swelling was going to be more of a bigger issue once later in my pregnancy. But I'm 32 weeks, so I'm thinking, okay, well, that might not be a good thing. So I tell my mom, I said, I don't feel right. Something don't feel right with me. I don't feel good. So she says, are you having the Braxton Hicks again? Are you having the contractions again? And I said, I don't think so. I don't think so. Cause I didn't really know what to feel like.
Right.
You know?
This is your first pregnancy.
Each time that I had went into, which I think was about four times prior to this, my uterus was not contracting for me to recognize what a contraction was.
Right.
I had just had severe pressure down below, which they said, you know, that's usually part of a contraction. But I didn't know enough about a contraction to know that was part of that.
Right.
So those other times I'd went into preterm labor, my stomach never contracted. I never had Braxton Hicks. I had other symptoms that was diagnosed as preterm labor. So this time, I felt my stomach getting hard. I was so young, I didn't know that was a contraction.
Right.
You know. So I said, I just don't feel right. Can you take me? Well, she threw a fit. She was real mean about it. And she said, well, I'll take you. I'll just drop you off. And I'm thinking to myself, well, that's fine, because that's what you always do. Right. But, you know. Well, she drops me off, and they take me to the back. They get a urine sample from me, because when the nurse walked in, she said, how long has your face been, are you swollen? And I said, yeah, you know, because I knew. They immediately ordered the urine, because they had, they said they already thought, this looks like preeclampsia right here, preeclampsia. And they tested, sure enough. It was within about 2 hours. The doc came in. He said, okay, little lady, I've got to induce your labor. You have a pretty bad case of preeclampsia. So we're going to have to take this baby right now.
Is that safe to do?
Wow. Oh, yeah. People get induced all the time.
Yeah.
It's very safe. It's normal.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what it feels like to just naturally go into labor, walking through the mall and your water breaking.
Yeah, it must be nice, right?
Yeah, because all four were induced.
Okay.
Because of preeclampsia or toxemia.
Gotcha.
So I said, okay, you know, and I called my mama, and she said, okay. And I didn't see her until, you know, after the baby was born. But
so you did it all by yourself?
Oh, yeah. With a nurse that I fell in love with, was so good to me through the whole thing. I used to go and see her every year on my son's birthday. I'd take him to go see her. Yes, it was just me, that nurse, the doctors, and the other nurses, and I delivered him. For a brief moment, they thought they were going to have to do a cesarean, but things took a turn for the better, and I was able to just push that little 3-pound baby out.
Oh, my goodness.
He was the size of my hand.
Oh, my goodness.
He was so tiny.
Like a puppy. Like a little puppy.
Yeah. He came out looking just like his father.
Oh.
I was like, really? Really, Lord? Really?
After all this shit, this is what I got to deal with? In that moment, after you gave birth, how did you feel? Did you feel the love that everybody says?
And... this blissful moment? No. Okay. I didn't feel any of that. I told you I was going to come on this podcast and be truthful. Yeah. No, I was exhausted.
Oh.
And then I was like, oh, you're going to put him on, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was 16. Still not realizing I'm legit a mama. Those mommy. Good feelings didn't really come until after I had him, I had a seizure due to the preeclampsia.
Oh, my goodness.
So I had to end up in ICU for a little bit after I had him. So he was being taken care of by the nurses while I was, you know,
trying to get better.
So once I was able to come out of there, move to a normal room, and they brought him in there to me, then it was the, okay, he's all mine.
Yeah.
He's all mine.
So what happens after this? After you have the baby, do you go back home?
I do go back home. And I've told many stories about, you know, things that happened after that on my social media, mainly on my TikTok.
Can we touch on them a little bit just in case of people, this is their first time hearing?
Yeah, because especially since I've brought up Miss Jenny, because I was out and about with my mama that day, you know, yard selling, and I go into preterm labor, and her dropping me off, but don't come back until, you know, it's time to be discharged. So I didn't have anything. I didn't have no shampoo, no body wash, no brush. I didn't have anything. I called my mama after I'd gotten out of ICU because I was in there a few days. I called my mama and I said, can you bring me some hygiene stuff? You know, I don't have a toothbrush and all that. And she told me no. I said, okay. You know, a couple hours later, after I'd called Miss Jenny, and I said, Miss Jenny, you going to come see the baby today? And she said, of course I'm coming. Of course I'm coming to see that baby. I said, well, can you see if Sarah can bring me like a pair of shorts or shirt? I said, I don't have anything here. Now, I didn't say anything. I didn't say I don't have toothbrush. I just said, can you ask Sarah if she bring me a few clothes I can sleep in comfortably? And she said, of course I will. Well, Miss Jenny shows up at the hospital, walks in the door with this big old basket, and in that basket was body wash and toothbrush and everything I needed to get myself back together. And I said, Miss Jenny, how'd you know I needed all that? She said, honey, your mama dropped you off with nothing, so I came back with everything.
No,
I couldn't. She always came in those moments that I needed her.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
she was a mom.
Yeah,
she was the mom that you weren't given.
She thought she birthed me.
Yeah,
that's how good she was to me. But I go home. I remember being wheeled out of the hospital, and I was holding him so tiny.
Well,
now he was so little, you know, he had to stay in there a few weeks, you know, because he's so little. Then he had to have a surgery. I know it. Because he had pyloric stenosis.
Mm.
Pyloric stenosis is like this muscle between the esophagus and the stomach that makes it where the formula comes out projectile. Whenever you have a baby, you'll always hear a pediatrician, look for these things. If you see this, you need to bring the baby back in. That's one of that. Because the projectile vomiting could mean pyloric stenosis.
Right.
And sure enough, I paid attention. And they seen it in the hospital after I'd called them in there. I said, hey, this came out like the poltergeist. This ain't right.
Right.
And they x-rayed him. Sure enough, he had pyloric stenosis. Mm. So then he had to have surgery. But the day we were leaving, they were wheeling me out, and I was holding him, and I no lie, I looked down and I said, I'm going to do everything I can to keep this baby safe and happy and healthy and so much better than what I had. Because, you know, we had the finances. We had the beautiful home and the nice car, and I had nice clothes. I had anything I wanted material-wise.
Right.
I just didn't have the only thing I needed, which was that love, you know.
He picked you, though. You know, your son picked you. He knew you needed him.
Oh, he saved me. Mm-hmm. And he probably don't even have any idea, because I don't.
Is that the one that I met?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. My oldest, 24. Mm-hmm. So 24 mm-hmm. years ago, mm-hmm. I had him. But, I don't even think those youngins know just how bad it was for me.
Yeah.
Because I don't even want the memories of me telling this in their minds.
Right.
You know?
Well, you've guarded them so much because you just didn't want them to ever hurt like you did.
Ever.
Or have a, you know. So what happens now after you have the baby, you go back home? What happens now?
Yeah, I go home, mm-hmm. you know, and it was about, I don't know, maybe 2-3 days later, and I could have the time frame messed up because I have terrible PTSD from all of this mess, but
which my is understandable. Mother leaves. You've been through some shit.
My mother leaves and goes somewhere. I want to say maybe she was shopping. I don't even know. I'm in my room and I'm feeding the baby. I'm feeding Gibson, and she come through the door out of nowhere. She opens the door and she says, "You need to leave." And I said, "Huh? You know what?" She says, "I don't want you here anymore. I don't want you or that bastard here anymore." She would always call my baby a bastard. Like I could physically harm somebody today calling my child that.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was about that word and her and referring to my baby as that, but it infuriated me. But I knew, I could tell by her eyes, I could tell by her face, she was in a manic episode.
Right.
So I had learned throughout the years when to don't say nothing.
Right.
Don't fight back.
Right.
Agree and walk away. Mm. Keep the peace. You need to be safe. Choose your right battles. Now.
Yeah.
There is a baby right here.
Right.
We need to be safe.
Right.
So I just said, okay. Just like that. I said, okay. And I went to get some stuff, and she said, "No, you're not taking any of this because I paid for this."
What a just an evil shit of
evils,
a woman.
I don't know what, honey. And I put the baby in the car seat, which she didn't pay for. I had gotten at a baby shower that I had was given. I grabbed the baby. I didn't have no clothes. I grabbed what I could fit in his diaper bag, what I could fit in there. And again, there were no cell phones back then, but I went to go use the phone in the kitchen, and she was right behind me, and she snatched it right out of my hand very aggressively. Again, I knew that if I did anything, this would escalate,
right?
And she could harm this baby.
Right.
And the only thing I needed to do,
you were being a mom.
I needed to get the hell out of that house with that baby is what I needed to do.
Yep.
So after she snatches the phone, and this was... I don't think I have ever been so afraid and so quiet in any of her episodes as I was at this moment on this one. And it was because this baby was here.
Right.
I grabbed the car seat and I walked out that damn door. Now, our nearest neighbor was about a mile and a half because there were wooded areas between us. And I took that carrier and I walked to my neighbor's house where my friend Amanda lived, and I wasn't crying. I was upset. I was afraid because I didn't know if she was going to come behind me in the vehicle and try to run me. I just didn't know.
No, you can't trust her.
It was the look on her eye. The look on her face. Mm-hmm. It was, I've never seen her.
I call it shark eyes. Yes. They look like sharks whenever they get like that.
Her eyes in general were traumatizing enough.
Right.
And my feelings were right. She was.
Stay tuned to next week's episode to see what happens in part 2 of Dumb Blonde Podcast.